Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. On today's show, you're going to hear a prediction about a comet for the year 2012, 2 years from now. Thank you to everyone in Colorado and those who helped around the country to bring in signatures to get personhood on Colorado's ballot this year. We tripled the number of required signatures submitted yesterday to the Secretary of State. We've done scores of shows on personhood in the last few months. So today we're going to talk about comets. Now, meteoroids are small rocks. Asteroids are large rocks hurtling through space. But what is a comet? Well, a comet is, you know, one of my favorite people to listen to about comets is a Navy guy who had quite a career in the Navy's nuclear program. Kevin Lee was accepted into the Naval Nuclear Program, and after serving on a nuclear submarine, he went on to work in the Nuclear Engineering Department of the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard. He was an instructor and was part of a think tank called the Nuclear Improvements Group. Well, Kevin even earned recognition as Employee of the Year out of 12,000 workers. So asteroids are rocks flying through space. Kevin Lee, what are comets?
Comets are, as Dr. Brown puts them in his book, they're the most dynamic, spectacular, variable, and mysterious bodies in the solar system. And the ancient people called them disasters, which comes from the Greek evil star, because they thought that when they would see a comet in the skies, that it meant that destruction was coming.
So an evil star, and we got our term disaster from that description of a comet. Kevin Lee, welcome to Bob Enyart Live. It's so great to interview you and have you on the radio so the audience could learn from your knowledge and experience.
Well, Bob, it's great to be on the program, and I want to thank you for your debate of the age of the Earth, which is something that ties in with comets. You guys did a great job in pointing out the fact that the Earth is young.
That was so much fun. Of course, that was against a geophysicist and a mathematician from CU in Boulder. And here's a Christian pastor, talk show host, and a Christian Science high school teacher, and we had the greatest time. But now, Kevin, to talk about comets, before we get to the prediction, just generally, so comets are extraordinary, but what are they? It's not a flying rock, right? What is a comet?
Well, what makes comets different from asteroids, meteors, is the fact that there's a large amount of water associated with a comet. In fact, it's been calculated, determined actually, that 38% of the mass of a comet is frozen water.
Frozen water. And we'll talk about the composition, other things that are in a comet in a little bit. So they've been described as dirty snowballs. In fact, you mentioned Dr. Walt Brown, his book, In the Beginning, which next to the Bible is my favorite book. But does that seem to be to you a reasonable description of a comet, a dirty snowball?
It's a very good description that's given by all comet experts. They call them dirty snowballs. What has really puzzled scientists recently, since the Stardust space probe brought back debris from the Vild 2 comet that was brought back to Earth in 2006, is that what they're finding the dirt part of the comet being made out of is completely puzzling and baffling to them, because it's completely contrary to the Big Bang mindset that they anticipated the Vild 2 comet dust being brought back by the Stardust probe would reveal.
Right.
They had certain expectations of what they'd find, and they were shocked, their words,
right,
at what they found.
Now, typically, this is typical with the study of comets, the Big Bang atheistic view of how comets originate seems to have a tremendous amount of difficulty with the actual observations and facts we know about comets. But before we describe some of those difficulties, again, comets themselves, they fly around our solar system at the speeds that they move at. I know in part of their journey, they really are moving quickly. in another part of their journey, they're moving very slowly. Why would that be? Why would their speeds change so much?
Well, it's exactly like if you're to, you know, launch a little Estes rocket or something that I used to do in school there in Littleton, Colorado, at the Arapahoe High School where I graduated.
Yeah.
And when you launch it, when it's leaving the launch pad, it's going very fast. When it gets up at the top, which is called apogee, when things pertaining to the Earth, it's going very, very slow, and then it comes back. Well, the same thing, a comet, when it's close to the sun, it's falling back to the sun, and typical speeds are 350 miles per second. And to put that in perspective, a 30-06 bullet is going about 0.6 miles per second.
So we're talking about 600 times faster than a speeding bullet.
That's correct.
And so these comets are, they can be huge with tails that are millions, hundreds of millions of miles long. So they're moving as fast as 350 miles per second. That's when they've been falling toward the sun for many years, right? Sometimes centuries or longer.
Well, yeah, and as they're falling, you know, when they're out at the very farthest place, called the aphelion from the sun, they're going, the speed is like 15 miles per hour. You could outrun a comet when it's far away from the sun. Then it starts pulling back. The sun's gravitational attraction is starting to pull back on the comet, and it's speeding up during all those years that it's returning.
Okay, so
and when it gets close to the sun, the gravitational attraction of the sun speeds it up to the 350 miles per second.
Okay, so if I could picture it, you've got a comet way out in space, and it's literally falling toward the sun. The gravity of the sun is pulling the comet toward it. Of course, if it goes right at the sun, it'll be destroyed. And
correct.
By the sun's corona and all. But it's going, typically it misses the sun, but the sun's gravity is pulling it downward. Then it wraps around the sun and it shoots out at that enormous velocity. And then it's basically being thrown upward from the perspective of the sun. And it goes upward for hundreds of years or thousands until it's almost at its peak. And then it slows down so much. You're saying we could outrun a comet, and it'll go for years at 15 miles an hour, and then it starts to fall back in.
Yeah, correct with everything you said, except the long-period comets are greater than 700 years, and there's some debate about there's not much more than the thousands of years. You said thousands of years.
Okay.
But when you get going that far away from the sun, it actually leaves the solar system altogether and becomes hyperbolic.
Right. Then you have an orbit that's not elliptical. It's beyond a parabola. It's hyperbolic. And why don't we talk about that in a couple minutes?
Okay.
But great point. The short-period comets and long-period comets, we're talking about centuries for their orbit. How about this? The tails of comets, they are super long, aren't they?
In fact, there can be more space than the distance between the Earth and the sun. One comet tail was measured at 3.4 AU, which is an astronomical unit, the distance between the sun and the Earth. And so a comet tail has been observed at 3.4 times the distance between the sun and the Earth.
Wow. So the sun to the Earth is 93 million miles. So we're talking about 100 million to 300 million miles long, the tail. And something interesting is the tails are made of almost nothing. One observation that Walt Brown puts in his book in the beginning is if you take 100 cubic miles, thank you, of a comet's tail, the amount of matter in that 100 cubic miles is the same as a cubic inch of air that we breathe.
Correct.
So So a comet's tail is almost like nothing, but it's just enough in there, the molecules, for the sun's light to bounce off it, and we see the tail.
Exactly. And we see, you know, they look so dynamic in the sky because the Earth's or the sun's, you know, photons hitting upon those little microscopic pieces of dust gives off the light, and it looks like it's, you know, a massive amount of matter out there. But as you say, and as it's been determined, there is hardly anything there. But it appears in the sky because of the sun's rays.
Wow. Now, the comet's tail, 100 million miles longer, however, does it always move behind the head of the comet? Is it always behind it when you think of the direction of the movement of the comet?
No, it's a misconception. What causes the tail is that the mass of the comet itself is all held together by its own gravitational attraction to itself. But as it moves towards the sun's solar wind, the effect of all the photons and subatomic particles that are leaving the sun, takes some of that corona head and they push it out into space as they're going by. It's like a solar wind that blows on the dust of a comet and sends it way out into space. So a comet, as a comet goes around the sun, its tail is always pointed away from the sun.
Away from the sun, so that when the comet is coming toward the sun, the tail is behind it. When it's moving away from the sun, the tail is actually in front of the comet's head.
Correct.
That's just astounding. And when you talk about that solar wind, Kevin Lee, a dear friend of Bob and Yurt Live, this ministry for many, many years, his job has been to fly satellites. That's what he does. He reports to work, and he has his set of satellites on computer monitors in front of them, and his job is to tweak their orbits to keep them right in an optimal orbit. And we're having dinner one night, his wife, my wife, we're having a great time, and I asked, do you ever try to take advantage of the solar wind and sort of use the solar panels on a satellite as sails? And I thought that was maybe an absurd question. And he said, that's exactly what we do. We take advantage of that solar wind on occasion. So this is a real effect, of course, coming from the sun, different from the wind that propels ships on the sea, of course. But all right, how about the strength of a comet? You said it's held together by the gravity. I've read in Dr. Walt Brown's book and elsewhere that comets are extraordinarily weak as compared to things on Earth.
That's correct. It's a scientific fact. When I was working in the shipyard still, I remember the big buzz in the shipyard when the Shoemaker Levy 9 comet 1992 was at first flew by Jupiter and got ripped into 23 pieces.
Yeah,
the comet was actually ripped apart by the gravitational attraction of Jupiter when it was going by on the approach, and then on the way back, it actually crashed into Jupiter.
Right, and the reason it would get ripped apart is because when a heavenly body comes close to another heavenly body, then the gravity on the near side of the comet has a much greater attraction than the gravity pull on the far side of the comet, and so that unequal pull splits it into pieces.
Because a comet is just a rock pile. It's a rock and debris pile with water, dust, dirt, and chunks of rock that are held together as they're traveling through space by the gravity of themselves. You standing next to your wife, you are having more than just an attraction that we know about emotionally. There's actually gravitational attraction between your two bodies, which are meaningless here on Earth because the overriding effect of gravity on Earth. However, if you and your wife were floating through space away from the Earth, if you started out a few feet away from each other, your gravitational attraction would actually pull you together if you were traveling in the same direction.
How romantic. You can't get a nicer picture. Now, Kevin, if I could offer a clarification, when you said a comet is like a flying pile of rocks, that's more like an asteroid, but a comet is thousands or millions of rocks, but it has a lot more water and ice than a typical asteroids have a lot of water and a lot of ice also. But comets tend to have more ice, true or false,
correct,
than asteroids.
Yes, in fact, they originally, until recently, they thought that asteroids were completely devoid of water, and they were totally different than comets. But there has been recent ability through increased power of telescope, et cetera, to see some asteroids in the asteroid belt are venting off gas from water, water vapor.
Right.
Gas.
Even though they're different, they're not as different as was once believed. The strength of a comet has been described as equal to a lemon meringue pie, but not the lemon part, just the meringue part.
Correct.
That's the strength of a comet. And Dr. Walt Brown points out, if two human beings were on opposite ends of a mile diameter comet, they'd be able to pull it apart if they could get a good grab on it. So comets are very weak if you compare them, like, say, to a flying mountain.
That's correct. In fact, something that might be interest interesting to the listeners is that just March 11th this year, so just a few days ago, a report was put out, Terminator asteroids could reform after nuke. And this is in the NewScientist.com article. And they were pointing out how as everybody's getting more and more concerned about potential asteroid collisions with the Earth and the havoc it would play, you know, that, hey, we should, if we see one in time, we can launch a nuke up to blow it up. But what they're realizing, because of the sphere of influence in space, which is what holds comets together, but tenuously, is that if you nuke an asteroid, it has to be a big enough nuke to truly separate it, because the nuke could go off and it would separate it for a time. But again, the sphere of influence would let those rock piles come back together, but held together by nothing but the gravitational attraction, which makes it very tenuous, just like a comet.
You mentioned earlier the Shoemaker-Levy 9 comet that broke into pieces and then 2 years later slammed into Jupiter. Jupiter's called a comet killer. The lifespan of comets, it seems that they're disappearing rapidly. They have a relatively short lifespan, especially compared to the claimed age of the solar system, 4.6 billion years old. Comets are supposedly millions of years old, but the math shows that they do not have long lifespans. Could you talk about that for a bit?
Well, yes. In fact, there's two basic groups of comets. One are called short-period comets, meaning they come into our solar system and revolve around the sun once within 100 years. Another group that is the long-period comets, which they make their orbit in 700 years, and then there's just a handful of comets between those two. Of the short-period comets, which are 205 of the 1,000 known comets, so about 20% of all known comets are short-period comets. And of those, 60% have their furthest distance that they move away from the sun before they come back in to revolve around the sun are in Jupiter's family, meaning they're very close to the orbit of Jupiter, and within 10,000 years, they will all be gone. Because Jupiter will sweep them all up, just like it did Shoemaker-Levy 9.
Right, so
this is a huge problem for astronomers.
Huge problem, because if they're destroyed in a matter of thousands of years, then they'd have to be replenished if they've been here for millions. But this has not happened. Short period comets remain short period comets. Long period comets, for very good reasons of physics, remain long period comets overwhelmingly. And so there should be a steady supply, but there is no steady supply.
This is a horrible problem. They cannot explain all these short-period comets that will be gone in 10,000 years. And there has never been a new comet observed to form. All comets that have ever been seen are comets that have already been around the Earth or have been within the sphere of the solar system's influence. There has never been a flyby hyperbolic type of comet. So in other words, all the comets that we do see are within the solar system's sphere of influence, and we have never seen a new one built.
And so this
and
is...
And yet the short-period ones will be gone.
And since they'll be gone, that means these are transient events. They're not things that would be there for millions or billions of years. And there are so many transient events in the solar system, like the rings of Saturn and so on the Earth, things that long-age scientists say, well, isn't it startling that we see these? Because they should be just be here in a blink of an eye. Why do we see these right now? They must have a source that they're constantly being created. And so they suppose that there's some kind of an Oort cloud or something way, way out surrounding like a sphere the entire solar system, but there are so many reasons that cannot be, and one is the composition of comets. Could we talk a little bit more about what they find when they look at comets? We've described them as dirty snowballs, so they have ice, water, that's ice, but what's the dirty part? What's in the comet?
Well, the reason why Dr. Brownlee at the University of Washington convinced NASA to spend $200 million to send the start a space probe up to the Vild 2 comet is because Vild 2 comet was coming in for the first time, and they thought it would be pristine, and it would bring back all this beginning of the universe, Big Bang stuff,
right?
That would be, you know, from the it formed in the outer reaches of near absolute zero cold space. Well, what it ended up bringing back are minerals that can only form in liquid water.
Right.
How can
such
you
as
have,
calcium carbonates.
Yeah, calcium carbonate, better
limestone.
Known as limestone.
Right.
How
clay.
Can limestone,
right,
being a comet that forms in liquid water that was supposedly out in the outer reaches of space its entire life.
Yeah, where it's minus 400 degrees or so Fahrenheit.
Yeah, found silicates. Oxygen, crystalline silicates of olivine, which is the most common mineral, crystal mineral on Earth.
Now, wait a minute. They find olivine on comets?
That's correct.
And of the thousands of minerals on Earth, olivine is probably the most common.
Yes.
So they find olivine on comets, which would not form because of its crystalline pattern. It just wouldn't form in the frigid temperatures of outer space.
Yeah, and some of them don't form.
Which is recognized.
And some don't form unless they're 1,300 degrees Fahrenheit. I was in the auditorium at the University of Washington on April 29th of 2006 when Dr. Brownlee, who was the brains behind the Stardust probe being launched into space, and he is brilliant. He did a great job in designing the spacecraft to go out there, scoop it, survive, you know, trailing.
Yeah,
getting into the comet tail, inventing aerogel, which is what caught the comet tail debris, brought it back to Earth. It was a very successful mission, and I was there when he notified the hundreds of people in the audience that he was shocked and dismayed by the results of what they found in the gel.
Because what they find basically is what you find on Earth. They thought what they would find is everything from the outer reaches of the solar system, but what they found are the kind of minerals that are in the inner solar system. In fact, it's like a recipe that comes from the Earth itself.
Exactly. And after his lecture, I went up and personally gave him Dr. Walt Brown's prediction that he sent in an email to me and others, where he predicted the very things that were found. And I said, Dr. Brownlee, this is a prediction from Dr. Walt Brown, an MIT mechanical engineering doctorate who has a theory of how comets came about. And he predicted, he's not the things that you found. He's not shocked at all by the things that you found. And you should read his chapter, and gave it to him.
And Dr. Brownlee, you just, I'm thankful that you forwarded to me an email that you just sent to him, asking him, Dr. Brownlee, have you read Walt Brown's chapter on the origin of comets, and do you have any thoughts, agreements, disagreements? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and actually, that was an email that followed up, you know, 2 years later. So that was in April 2006. I saw him face to face, and then on August 17th, 2009, 3 years later, they made the public announcement that finally, after doing, you know, massive further investigations to rule out contamination, they finally went public with the fact that Stardust also brought back amino acid glycine. So an amino acid was caught.
Amino acids.
The Stardust space probe.
They find methane and ethane, which typically are produced by bacteria.
Correct.
They find organics. In fact, their terminology, abundant organics. And, of course, Hoyle, most people know about Hoyle, one of the world's best-known scientists, have argued that what they're finding is bacteria and cellulose in comets. And cellulose, of course, comes from wood and plants.
Correct. And he knows this. He talked to me for 10, 15 minutes on the phone on August 17, 2009, where he said, Dr. Brownlee, I read the article that you came public with amino acids, because I had stood up and asked a question from the audience in 2006 at his lecture, you know, have you found organics or any evidence of life or building blocks of life on the Vild 2 comet that was brought back by Stardust? He didn't answer the question. So So then I saw, oh, he's coming out with amino acids. And so I gave him a call. I said, remember me? I'm the one I gave you the Dr. Brown's theory. Mm-hmm. And you know, Dr. Brownlee, you're shocked. You're again shocked with amino acids. Yes, he's shocked. He admitted it.
Right.
And I said, did you read Dr. Brown? He said he asked me again for the website of Dr. Brown's
creationscience.com. And the entire chapter on the origin of comets is right there online. And of course, we sell the book too. I'll give a shameless plug, Kevin Lee. But here at Bob and Your Live, we sell In the Beginning by Dr. Walt Brown. And the chapter on the origin of comets is stunning. What they say they're shocked about are the predictions of Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory that comets, long ago when the crust of the Earth cracked, the evidence for that is the mid-oceanic ridge that completely circles the Earth. The crust of the Earth cracked, and it ejected from what the Bible calls the fountains of the great deep. It ejected rock, debris, and water that left the Earth's gravitational pull and became the comets of the solar system. That's one of the reasons why the surface of the moon is as marked up as it is. And we're awfully close to out of time. Could you tell us what the prediction is? And perhaps you and I could do a second half of this show in a week or so.
Well, I'd love to be able to follow up if we can. The prediction is that Walt talks about in his book, he studied the orbit of every single comet that's ever been discovered. There are what he calls strange pairs, comets that regular comet researchers think are completely different comets, but their orbits are so like each other
right. That
statistically they shouldn't be the same. And Dr. Brown predicts there's actually a little bit more mass in our solar system past Neptune, and they're starting to find trans-Neptunian objects, big, huge asteroids, you know, not asteroids, but mass, rocks, out mm-hmm. past Neptune. And he predicts that there's the mass of more than one Jupiter out there that's sucking in comets quicker than what we think. And so these comets that people thought were never going to come back are actually coming back sooner.
And he predicted
one of them is going to come in 2012.
So, Kevin Lee, this is so interesting, and there's so much more. Can we do another show in about a week?
Sure.
We'll do our conclusion on comets. Thank you, Pastor Kevin Lee. We'll talk about Kevin being a pastor on the next show. Maranatha, what a great school. God bless you.